Welcome to the Closing Mark Report. It's March the 25th, 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. And Mike Wolverton of Kansas State will join us closer to the bottom of the hour to take up the energy markets. In agricultural news, a farm bill extension is looking more likely than not. What has the U.S. Grains Council done for you lately? And the head of one of the world's largest food companies takes a pot shot at biofuels. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly, and then we'll hear about the latest assessment of the hypoxia zone in the Gulf of Mexico. U.S. EPA asked the Science Advisory Board to gather up all the info on the dead zone that stretches from the coastal waters of Texas to the mouth of the Mississippi River. Hey, don't forget that just after the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Don Day will join us for a complete look at today's agricultural weather forecast. So stay with us, won't you, for this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL AM 580, public radio from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago, on this Tuesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. Nearby May soft red winter wheat, 47.5 cents the gain today at $10.67.5. July at 10.68.5 up 50 cents, and July of next year for 2009, 38.5 cents higher at $10.28. May corn futures 5.44¾ up the 20 cent limit. July at 5.57 up 20, and September at 5.60 up 20. December futures at 5.59¾ up 20 as well. December corn next year for 2009 at 5.39. up 20 cents. May soybeans at $13.07 a bushel, up 50. July at $13.22, 50 higher. August up the 50 limit at $13.16. And November beans at $12.39, up 50 cents. May bean meal at $3.50.30, up 20 for the afternoon. May bean oil at $57.77, up the 2 cent limit. From the Mercantile Exchange, April live cattle at $91.15, 72.5 cents higher. June futures unchanged today at $90.85 for the live cattle. April feeders at $103.10, down 17.5 for the day. And the August feeder cattle at $110.35, a loss of 27.5 cents. April lean hog futures at $57.90 a hundredweight, $1.60 higher for the day. And the May futures at $69.17.5, up 77.5 cents on this Monday afternoon from the CME Group. Taking a look at the outside markets now, crude oil trading the nearby May contract at $101.15, up 29. June futures at $100.25, they're up a penny for the day in the crude oil a barrel. CRB index at 389.39, that's up 109 for the day. And the dollar is trading at 72.24, down 0.67 at this hour. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, a 15-minute delayed call, down 11 points at 12,560. Gold trading the nearby March contract at $934.60 an ounce, up $16.30. April futures at $935. They're up $16.30 for the afternoon. And the S&P at 669.26 is up 6.63. At the bottom of the hour, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming will join us. Here's what our own Mike Sola says the two-state forecast looks like for this evening. He says in the northern part of Illinois, partly cloudy. Elsewhere, mostly cloudy, a few showers in the far south and in eastern parts of Indiana. Lows will range, says Mike, from 28 in northern Illinois to 46 in the south. Tomorrow in the north, partly sunny skies. Elsewhere, mostly cloudy, widely scattered showers. A few isolated thunderstorms will be possible in the south. Highs tomorrow will range from 45 in the far northern sections of Indiana to 63 in the southern part of Illinois. A return of active weather to close out the work week and continuing into the weekend will bring a renewed concern of flooding and pre-planting delays for much of the two-state area, especially in the southern sections near the Ohio River, that is, says our own Mike Sola. Warmer weather is on the horizon, though. Computer models indicate that near-average temps will close out March with a warming trend for the first week of April.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. 866-837-9027.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Tuesday afternoon. We're joined by Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Hi, Wayne.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about the marketplace. Two big up days in Chicago on a Monday and a Tuesday.
I'll tell you what a way to start the week after last week's devastating losses, Todd. I think what we saw last week, we saw liquidation by some of the commodity funds wanting to pare down their positions, some of them changing firms, liquidating, and then some come back this week after paring down their positions and started in some new buying. And then there just hasn't been sellers above this market once we got down to some of the Fibonacci numbers, some of the goals that some of the people are looking at looked like was going to be value. And it's just been sort of a straight-up move without much selling resistance on top of things to slow things down. Now, will that continue the rest of the week or not? You know, we've had an awful big move for just 2 days, $1 in beans and 40 cents in corn. So we could start to see a little bit of, I think that we'll trade this evening, whether we don't think we'll lock limit up. So, very strong closes today.
I do have some questions about this. Volume was light yesterday and today both?
Well, I think, I don't think there was many contracts that traded because once you get to limit up, there's big pools, but that doesn't mean there's a lot of trading going on.
Well, could you see them, though? Were there very big pools up there?
The beans had very big pools. Now, of course, the corn was trading with about 45 minutes to go in the day and come back, and it had 400 and 500 in its pools. So the corn was not tremendously big pools. There was over 100,000, actually showing 200,000 to 300,000. Contracts in the beans. But we know that there's some unrealistic numbers being stuck out there because of some of these computer programs that put in a larger amount of sales and automatically cancel once they get the percentage that they want sold when it gets limited up or limited down.
Oh, I didn't know that happened. That just doesn't sound fair.
It isn't what we would like to hear and talk about, but maybe it can be mentioned at the CFTC hearings coming up here in April. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm hoping so. I was thinking that maybe somebody from here, I'm working on maybe trying to get out to that, and if I do, we can maybe take some comments from our listeners out with me. I don't know whether that'll happen or not, but we'll see whether we can.
I think it's very important whether farmers would attend or not that they do send their or voice their opinion and get it to somebody that can present it to somebody out there that at least has their opinion being known to be talked about at the hearing. And I think that the delivery points for the convergence factor in this wide basis level is something that just has to be addressed so much because it's making our markets unrealistic on the board if we're going to have over a dollar basis in areas where we've only had 20 cent basis.
You know, I was going to follow up, and this runs down this line. So the reason I asked about volume and what was up there, and then, of course, we had a little bit more of a discussion there, was that if the commercials truly are not selling, they're not hedging, they're not, you know, they're basis only, if they're not going to sell a contract, then who are the sellers in this market as it gets pushed higher? Is there anybody other than a speculator out there that's looking to sell the market to?
Well, of course, there is some pricing being done by commercials in the different time frames, but not the degree that there would have been in many other cases, Todd, especially in the deferred months. I know that a lot of the large grain companies are definitely pricing 30 to 60 days out. Some of them are letting farmers price some of the fall stuff. You know, I know that ADM was still pricing fall fall prices from farmers, but all in all, the industry has really pulled back as far as hedges go. So it is basically dominated more by what the funds do than in the past.
All right. Anything else to add before I let you go for the time?
You know, looks like a strong week. We are looking for the bean acres to probably increase a little bit on this report from the last report.
All right. Monday morning, of course. Thanks much, by the
Thanks,
way,
Todd.
Wayne. Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Monday morning, USDA will release its latest figures on acreage, an estimate of what will be put in the ground by farmers in the Midwest and across the nation in terms of corn and soybeans. Tune in Monday morning for that programming right here on this radio station, and we'll, of course, carry it in the afternoon during the closing market report. In today's agricultural news, farm bill negotiators continue to miss self-imposed deadlines for advancing a new farm bill, leaving the very real possibility Congress may have to extend the old law through 2009. Two Fridays ago, House Ag Chairman Colin Peterson told reporters.
At the end of next week or the first part of the week after, we're still having some real reservations. And then at some point, you know, if we don't have this wrapped up by the first week that we come back here, we won't get the bill done.
Congress returns next Monday, and there's still no farm bill funding deal among key committees and the White House. That's causing growing concern for National Corn Growers Association Vice President of Public Policy John Doggett.
I don't think there's been an agreement on a number. There hasn't been. You take a look at, you hear first on the House side that there's an agreement, then you hear that the Senate will not agree to those provisions, and then the opposite then occurs. There has not been an agreement on this farm bill above budget baseline.
With no funding deal by next week, Doggett says the only realistic alternative to automatic 1949 subsidies and a rough fight over a baseline bill is a year-long extension of the current farm bill, despite the temporary loss of new funding for conservation, food stamps, energy, and specialty crops.
We have heard a number of members of Congress, particularly on the House side, who are very concerned that there wouldn't be an increase in the nutrition programs in the farm bill. That's a fairly large constituency. Secondly, when you look at the opportunities that would be lost to the specialty crops or fruit and vegetable producers, that is significant. I mean, those crops are grown in states like California, Texas, Florida, Michigan, states with a very large number of members of the House of Representatives.
The two ag chairs also fear an extension may be hard to pass, relieve pressure to do a bill, or reduce future dollars for a farm bill. But without a deal, it appears it may be the only alternative left. One of the brightest spots in the U.S. economy is, of course, the strength of agricultural exports. America has been reaping the benefits of soaring exports, that amid the weak dollar, which makes U.S. goods and products and services less expensive to foreign buyers. Finding buyers, though, isn't always easy. For grain producers, that task is handled in part by the U.S. Grains Council. The council was founded in 1960 by sorghum growers and now represents the interest of sorghum, corn, barley growers all across the United States. Del Artro is a Texas sorghum producer and knows how the council works for him. He is chairman of the U.S. Grains Council.
It's about market development, and there are many aspects of that, but there's access, there's the ability to sell into the country. You have to service those markets then, because any time that there are people involved and there's money in particular that takes place, there's conflicts. So that the council helps resolve those issues within the trade, and we're a trusted third party group to come to. So when we do trade servicing, it really helps a producer in that aspect.
Arthur farms in the small community of Wildorado, Texas, just east of Amarillo, and is a longtime member of the National Sorghum Producers Board of Directors. And a couple of kicker stories to round out the news for the day, this one on raising a child and how much it cost. While the overall cost of raising a child has increased 15% from 1960 to 2007, a report released Monday by USDA's Center for Nutrition Policy and Promotion shows the cost of feeding a child is lower than it once was. According to the USDA report, expenditures on children by families, the cost of providing food, shelter, clothing, and other necessities for a child born last year will total more than $204,000 by that child's 18th birthday. The cost of providing food is 17% of that total. That's down from 24%. Child care and education expenses have increased from 2% to 12%. And finally, speaking of food and feeding, we have this note from the chief at Nestle on biofuels. The head of the world's biggest food and drink company is attacking plans to subsidize biofuels. It's been quoted around the globe over the weekend that the chairman and then chief executive of Nestle Incorporated has called biofuel subsidies irresponsible and immoral. He also said that if 20% of the world's oil demand is fulfilled by biofuels as predicted, there won't be any food left to eat. He says water and land for cultivation are becoming scarce while demand for biofuels drives up the price of corn, soybeans, and wheat. That a quote from the chief at Nestle. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from the University of Illinois. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason, your host for the afternoon. Please visit our website. The address is willag.org. Now up next, the United States Environmental Protection Agency has just completed a reassessment of the hypoxia zone in the northern Gulf of Mexico. I'll have more on the findings and how they relate to the Corn Belt. The hypoxic zone in the northern Gulf of Mexico has been documented since 1985. It's an area fed with a nutrient load from the Mississippi River. The nutrients cause an algal bloom, which limits the amount of dissolved oxygen in the water. It cannot support most marine life. U.S. EPA asked the Science Advisory Board in 2006 to review all the documentation of the zone, evaluate it against the latest science, and to make recommendations for reducing its size. The board convened 21 experts to take on the task, including Mark David from the Agricultural College at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. He says the task force confirms the nutrient load feeding the algae bloom comes primarily from the Mississippi River Basin.
What we found was we reaffirmed what was previously known, and that is that the nutrient, that nitrogen is the primary nutrient that causes the problem, but we also found that phosphorus is also a contributing nutrient.
So the Science Advisory Board says the Corn Belt is the primary source of nitrogen feeding the hypoxic zone in the northern Gulf of Mexico, and that phosphorus is coming along with that nitrogen.
Once you have so much nitrogen, then the phosphorus can become limiting. The other thing I want to add about phosphorus, though, phosphorus brings into management the sewage treatment plants, because phosphorus, we calculated about a third of the phosphorus that goes down the river comes from sewage treatment. So it's in that case, it's two-thirds maybe agriculture, one-third effluent.
That one-third, two-third statement can also be applied to the hypoxic zone, which last year covered about 7,900 square miles from the mouth of the Mississippi River to the coastal waters of Texas. The Science Advisory Board suggests the aim should be to reduce its size by two-thirds, and it has a voluntary plan of action.
Basically, that there's no simple answer, that corn and soybean as a management system is very leaky, and that there's just no one thing that we can do that will fix it. We came up with a whole range of management options, from perennial crops being the most ideal thing, but that's not likely to happen, and that there's all kinds of other things, less fall application of N, to cover crops, to alternate crops, all could work.
U.S. EPA plans to reassess nitrogen and phosphorus load reductions and the response of the hypoxic zone in 2013. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Time for our Tuesday afternoon weekly look at the energy markets. And on this Tuesday, we're always joined, this Tuesday of the month, that is, we're always joined by Mike Wolverton. He's a grains analyst at Kansas State University based in Manhattan. Hi, Mike. Thanks for joining me this afternoon.
Hi, Todd. How are you?
I'm very well this afternoon. How are the skies there first?
It's a little overcast. We have strong winds again today. We had extremely strong winds yesterday.
Well, they blew in here last night, and they've been strong for a while now, for the last 18 hours, I suppose. And looks like we're going to stay that way. Tell me about the energy markets as they relate to biofuels from your viewpoint.
Well, the profit margins improved a little bit, both for ethanol and for biodiesel. The ethanol profit margin improved because corn price came down about 30 cents a bushel, My calculation on my hypothetical plant shows a 20 cents per gallon profit. For the biodiesel, they're still underwater. I show a 9 cent per gallon net processing margin, but still, that's better than they have been experiencing.
Is 20 cents enough margin to make a plant operational year in and year out?
For ethanol, yes. They're making more now from selling distillers' grains than from ethanol sales, but put them together, and they're doing okay.
And your outlook as we go into the next 18 months, how many plants are due to come on board, and how much production will there be?
We have 63 plants now under construction or expanding, and my guess is about two-thirds of those will come online in 2008. And that'll boost the demand, corn demand for ethanol production to about a billion more bushels next year than we used this year.
So from what, 3.3 to 4.3?
My figures show about 3.2 billion bushels up to about 3.9 or 4 billion bushels.
And are we going to be able to produce enough, do you think? And I know the acreage numbers aren't out and we don't have a crop in the ground, but you think we can divvy it up properly to make that work?
Well, that's a big question, Todd, and it's going to depend on acres planted and also the yields. If we get the acres planted that people are estimating now with the trend line yields, we'll be okay. We'll have enough corn and be able to supply the ethanol plants as well as the other uses.
Exports will be maintained?
I think exports are likely to fall a bit next year. I'm looking for corn production around the world to increase. Plus, this year, livestock feeders were not feeding wheat. They were feeding corn instead. And if we get good wheat production around the world, they'll go back to feeding wheat next year.
That could be how large a part of the rebalance might that be going back to wheat, you think?
It's not a big portion, but it'll amount to several hundred million bushels out of the corn demand and more wheat being fed to livestock.
Do you hear anything from Washington, D.C. about pushes to roll back the mandate by a year?
There's been a little rumbling. I don't know how serious that is. I think if we get in a situation where we have a short corn crop this year, we might see some serious attempts to roll back the mandate.
But under normal growing conditions, you don't think that would happen, despite the fact that we're going to bring a lot of production online in the next 18 months?
I don't think so. If we have normal crops this year, I think we'll be able to handle it quite well. And the ethanol plant building boom has really been a big shot in the arm to rural communities, and I don't think anyone wants to damage that.
And finally, as we round up, about a minute and a half left, what is your thought on where, if at all, a new plateau has been put in for corn in terms of what it might move around? We were at, what, 232 or thereabouts for 30 years. We've got a new plateau that we might move about from your point of view?
Well, that's been a big question. We just finished up our round of farmer meetings this winter, and the big question is, will prices drop, corn price, drop back to the previous low levels? And what I've been telling people is that I think prices will fall, but not back to the previous low levels, because the cost of production has just gone up so tremendously. What I'm saying to people now, for long-term planning, to look at $4 to $5 corn. And so that's kind of what we're looking at right now.
All right. Thank you very much. That's Mike Wolverton. He is a Kansas State University Extension agronomist, joins us from his Manhattan, Kansas office. Somebody from Mike's office, well, Mike himself or a couple of others, always join us here on a Tuesday afternoon to take a look at the agricultural energy markets. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. In 2 minutes, we'll talk with Don Day about the agricultural weather forecast.
It's National Lobster Newburgh Day. The dish was perhaps invented by Ben Wenberg, a sea captain in the fruit trade between Cuba and New York. He first demonstrated the dish at Delmonico's restaurant in New York City, where the creation was added to the menu as lobster a la Wenberg. Months later, after an argument with Charles Delmonico, Wenberg was banished from the restaurant. And Delmonico flipped a few letters in Wenberg's name on the menu, Lobster Newburgh was born. It's also Pecan Day. In 1775, George Washington planted pecan trees, some of which still survive at Mount Vernon. The trees were supposedly a gift to Washington from Thomas Jefferson. On this day in agricultural history in 1848, William Keith Brooks was born. An American zoologist, he was a champion for the conservation of the Chesapeake Bay oyster. In 1867, Ferdinand Runge died. He was a German chemist who developed a method for obtaining sugar from beet juice. And in 1914, Norman Ernest Borlaug was born. He was one who laid the groundwork of the so-called Green Revolution, the agricultural technological advance that promised to alleviate world hunger. And he developed a wheat-rye hybrid with higher yield and protein content. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Listening to the Closing Mark Report, I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon to you, Don.
Good afternoon.
I'd like to see some sunny skies, even a little wind. We're getting that at the moment, but could you help us dry out here in the Midwest?
No, well, don't get used to it. Everything that we see here for the last week of March and into the first couple of days of April is more stormy, wet weather. The pattern is going to favor quick-moving systems coming off the Pacific coast, racing through the Rockies, and then hitting the Midwest, drawing moisture up out of the Gulf. And this is just a perfect setup to bring more wet weather to the Midwest, the Corn Belt. We're looking at precipitation amounts that are going to be anywhere from as much as 100 to 400% of normal in some areas, especially southern Illinois, southern Indiana, portions of Ohio. This is going to exacerbate the flooding. So, unfortunately, a period of warm, dry weather is not in the cards.
Al, anything in the past that you can take a look at in terms of years that are comparative to this year? Have you looked back yet?
I wish I could. And that's been one problem with long-term forecasting for this year, because this year we've had a strong La Nina in the Pacific Ocean where water temperatures are cooler than normal. It's been one of the strongest, maybe going back to 98 or 1999. Unfortunately, the analogies to this year's La Nina with years past hasn't matched up very well. One thing that we will likely continue to see, probably well into April, due to La Nina in some parts, is this active stormy pattern with the weather in the Midwest continuing to stay stormy at least through mid-April. So I've got more to say in terms of more wet weather. It's likely coming well into the middle of the month.
Now, who's the wettest? What parts of the Midwest? I know they're really suffering at the moment in the boot heel of Missouri, parts of Arkansas. They should be getting into the growing season, I would think, but have been halted by rainfall. Where else do we put a lot of rain on the ground?
Well, unfortunately, the same areas that are really wet are the areas that are in best position to get more out of this. That would mean Missouri. That would mean Arkansas. That would mean portions of eastern Oklahoma, east Texas, down into the lower Mississippi Valley areas. We do expect that there may be a little bit more northward shift to some of this heavier moisture into the southern Great Lakes and maybe the northwest Corn Belt as well. So places like Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Iowa stand to get better chances of moisture as well.
Maybe you better tell us a little bit about Illinois and Indiana over those two-week period, too.
Well, the southern areas, the southern counties, are going to be most under the gun. This will be especially true for, let's say, all of Indiana, I think, is under the gun, and central and southern Illinois stands to see the heaviest moisture, lighter as you go further north and west.
And then turn your attention to South America. Harvest is more than half done for soybeans now.
Yeah, and as we take a look at the weather down there, the best weather for harvest continues to be in Argentina. Brazil, which has been a little bit wet, still has got showers in the forecast, but drier. So there should be less in the way of harvest delays down there.
Anything else to add before I let you go?
Keep the umbrella handy.
All right. Thanks, Don.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joins us here every Tuesday afternoon on the Closing Market Report. Please visit our website, the address, WILLAG.org. And as you get that equipment ready to go for the growing season, stay safe. I'm Todd Gleason.